This is Missy Martinez Stone, and you're listening to The Centered Podcast, where we have unifying conversations on the divisive subject of abortion. Hi, and welcome to The Centered Podcast. I'm your host, Missy Martinez Stone. And today we have a very, very special guest. I dragged my husband into this.
Cheers.
My team wanted the perspective of somebody who is married to a pro-life leader, has been our entire marriage. And he has...
And I'm the husband that volunteered out of all the husbands?
Yes. Well, your wife is the one with the podcast.
No, the joke is of all your husbands.
Oh.
The one that...
Sorry.
Oh, we don't talk about that. Sorry.
No.
I'm her only husband.
I don't get a lot of his jokes.
Is my sense of humor welcome?
Yes.
Okay.
What was I saying? Oh, so they wanted the perspective of somebody who watched our organization literally from the beginning start and grow and become what it is today. So I asked my husband, Aaron Stone, to join me. So what many people probably don't know is my husband is actually in a rock band. He is a semi-famous musician.
Sure.
And now owns his own video production company, and is an incredible storyteller. So he's helped us a lot. All those beautiful videos that you've seen come out about our organization, Ultraviolet Media. So you can plug that too. Anybody needs a video made.
Ultravioletmedia.us. Hit us up.
Yeah.
We do the best work at the best rate.
Yeah, it's true. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm a marginally successful artist. I went to college and grad school, went to seminary, and then started playing music as a kid, and was fortunate enough to sign a record deal out of grad school, and spent most of my late 20s and a lot of my 30s touring, and we were fortunate enough to build a fan base that has supported us to keep doing it. Not enough for it to be my only income or only living, but enough that I'm very, very thankful as an artist that I get to have that and do that. And
your band is called?
My band is called My Epic. You
can listen to them wherever you get your music.
Yeah, wherever. We put out a new record just a few months ago with Tooth & Nail Records called L'Oreal.
It's beautiful.
Thank you, baby. And it wouldn't exist without your support either.
It's true.
And then I started a video production business. Six years ago, we moved here. Same time. We started our businesses at the same time. One nonprofit, one for profit.
And it was right before the global pandemic, and we had our first child.
Yeah, during.
So we did it the hardest way.
Well, we did it the way we did it. I wouldn't know. I can't compare it to anyone.
Okay.
It's just what we went through, right? But
sure.
Certainly there were complications. We both ran our offices out of the house. I sort of stumbled into it. I sort of discovered in my mid-30s that these gifts that I've been working with as a storyteller and as a leader of putting a team together and producing things lent itself to this industry. And so I have a business partner who's more
holding the camera.
Yeah, he's the tech guy, and he's equally brilliant. Mm-hmm. And we've been together now. I started the company with another friend who's wonderful. But Ethan and I have been together for 3 years. The company's been growing in earnest. And we have, you know, several nationwide clients. And so I get to make art with my band, and I get to make videos, and sometimes I get to make them for you, which is cool.
That's true.
And then the biggest thing would be that I met you and that there's a we.
So we've been together in November. We've been married for 10 years, together for 11.
Yeah.
When we met, you know, we were probably in the worlds that we ran in, older. You know, so I was 24 and you were 30, and I was already working full time in the pro-life movement. I was at Students for Life of America. We were living outside of Washington, D.C. I was commuting every day up into the D.C. area to work for Students for Life. And we were both, he was a worship and creative pastor at a large church in the area. And we both were just happily doing our thing.
I don't think either one of us was terrified of being alone or we weren't even really actively.
I mean, I was dating around a little bit. It wasn't anything.
Yeah. I'd had a lot of serious relationships that just weren't the right fit. And, so I was kind of like, yeah, I mean, I'm open to it, but I'm pretty happy and pretty busy. Mm-hmm. I was making the music with the band and then I was leading this big creative team and leading worship. And so are we telling the story?
Yeah. Yeah. People want to know how we met. Cause it is a funny story.
So I hired a guy to build a drum cage for me.
Explain to people people don't know what a drum cage is.
Okay, when you go see a drummer, sometimes there's a cage around them.
But it had to look nice.
It had to look, yeah. I worked at a big church that was kind of had traditional and contemporary stuff going on, so it had to look really nice. And so I got recommended this carpenter. They're like, this guy's good, and he's a musician, and they didn't really tell me that he was also in ministry. So we met and hit it off immediately, and Randy and I became kind of fast friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, having toured around a lot, I've met lots of people from lots of different walks of life. And so, and he reminded me of a couple guys that I knew. And so we just clicked. And then one day his wife and their kids all came when he was working on it. And I met them and was just like throwing his kids around and stuff. And when they left, apparently his wife, whose name is Caitlin, said to Randy, like,
that's Randy is my brother. I thought you were forgetting.
One of us is a storyteller who's saving the information.
Sorry.
No. And she told Randy, that's your sister Missy's husband. And
she knew it. She clocked it.
Right away. Like first time she met me. And so then they started trying to.
Then she texted me.
They tried to set us up and we were both like.
Well, she texted me.
Okay.
And all I get from Caitlin, and this is, I don't know, people listening might know who Caitlin is. So Caitlin.
She's a doll.
Know Pat Mahoney. From old school pro-life movement world, that is Caitlin's father. And he and his daughters, we would go up to DC. That was like my earliest activism.
You grew up with Caitlin. I was like,
yeah, I grew up with Caitlin and her sister, Dylan. We would go up to DC as like 15, 16 year old. So we had known each other for years and years at this point. And so she texted me and she said, hey, you need to meet this guy, Aaron Stone. And all I said back was, no.
just didn't want to be set up.
No.
You didn't want to be set up, you know?
Yeah, because at that point, everybody was, you were dealing with the same thing.
Well, a lot of people were trying to, I worked at a big church and I was the only pastor who was single. So they were always trying to, and they would always be like, they'd always be too much or like,
people had good intentions, but everybody saw like these young, people in our
careers driven,
and they're like, oh, the next thing is that you need to meet somebody. And we were both kind of like, well, we will when we can.
They had said to me, you should come by sometime. We have lots of you're not married. We have lots of amazing young women. And I was like, that's cool. I kind of kindly said pass. And so then one day, Randy calls me and he's like, oh, no. So then no. The story.
So yeah. I had been traveling a lot because when I was at Student Track America, I was just on the road constantly. I mean, I was managing 20 regional coordinators and overseeing 1,000 student groups. So I was just always traveling. And I was living with my family at the time with my brother and my sister-in-law and the kids. And I hadn't seen them for a couple of weeks because they were traveling. I was traveling and we'd all finally gotten home and I just missed them so much and wanted time with, because the kids were 2 and 3 and 4, they were young at that point. And so Caitlin said, hey, we're all going to this fall festival that this church puts on every year. We're going to take the kids. Do you want to come with us? And I went, oh, absolutely. I haven't seen you guys. I'd love to spend time with my family and do something fun. So we put them all in their cute little costumes. And
what she didn't know is this was a huge event that my church was putting on for like tens of thousands of people where we took over the mall.
Right.
And so I get a text from Randy saying like, hey, we're coming to your church's event. And I was like, sweet. I was super busy, running a lot of stuff. He's like, but he wanted to check. I was like, oh yeah, I'll come by and say hi. And so at one point he's like, we're at the Chick-fil-A in the food court. And I was like, okay, I'll run over. So
and you were like very busy.
Yeah,
like this is like the biggest event they put on every year. And
so I ran over and I started talking to Randy. And, I'm a single guy. Like, my eye clocks that there's like a really beautiful woman in my periphery. Like I wasn't thinking actively about it. You just, your radar's on, you know? Mm-hmm. And then at some point, you know, I'm talking to him and then Caitlin and the kids are like, oh, it's good to see the kids again. He's like, oh, and this is my sister Missy. And I was like, oh, hey, good to meet you. And I was like, oh, that's the beautiful girl. It's his sister. Cool. And then we just kept talking and.
Well, tell them what your real first thought was.
Well, I'll get there. So we finished talking, me and Randy, we didn't really talk. I just finished. I was like, good to meet you. Finished talking to Randy. And then as I went to leave, I was like, was it Missy? And she was like, yeah. I was like, good to meet you. And she's like, good to meet you. Walked away. Neither of us thought anything of it. I did think in my head, well, that girl's too gorgeous to like be substantial. Like, which is very judgmental. I regret it. It was like a you know.
She's too pretty to have any substance.
Yeah, yeah. I thought she was like too pretty like to be very deep. And
not that pretty people.
You know, that shows trauma from my past because that's not true. Because, you know, I'm gorgeous too. Yeah, and I'm very deep. So then like.
We start leaving and Caitlin starts badgering me. Like, so what did you think? And I was like, I said two words to this.
Well, first you're like, think about what, right?
Yeah. I was like, what?
Did you know that they were introducing you to me at that moment?
No. I had no idea. So she's like, what did you think? And I was like, we said two words to each other. Like, she's like, well, did you think he was cute? And I was like, yeah, he's cute. Would you go out with him? And I'm like, I mean, I guess. Like, I don't. There's what we literally said.
He kind of remembered my name.
Yeah.
Like what am I?
what am I basing this off of? But they took that.
So they called.
And I said, yeah. I mean, I guess so.
So Randy called me and was like, "Hey, are you into dating? And like, are you open? Are you dating anyone right now?" I was like, "I'm not." And he's like, "Would you take a recommendation?" And I was like, "Well, normally no, but I've come to really respect you. So if there's someone you think that would really be a good fit, because at that point he was getting to know me well enough to know like." You know, I wasn't fitting in any real box easy. And he's like, mm-hmm. starts describing this girl to me. He's like, she loves the Lord and she's really talented and she's really committed to working, you know, for the Voiceless and all this other stuff. And she's talented and she played music and she's just so kind. And I'm like, this person sounds great. Like, who is this person? And he's like, my sister. And I'm like, what sister? Because in my head, I'm like, I can't be the hot one. Like, can't be the one that, again, hotness is a personal thing. I find very attractive. I was like, what sister? And he's like, I didn't know any of the sisters that he had. I didn't know Carrie yet. And I was like, he was like, Missy. And I was like, oh, I was like, well, she's gorgeous. And I was like,
you said beautiful because that's
okay. I said, she's beautiful. I said, oh yeah. I mean, I wasn't like, oh my God. I was just like, yeah, she's beautiful. I was like, if she's everything you say and you're her big brother and you're calling me, telling me, I should take her out. I was like, then, like, I'll take it under advisement, you know? Like,
yeah, and this is big news because, listen, my brother has never in my entire life at that point of my 24 years ever liked anybody that I dated, ever approved of anybody that, like he just shot every single person down. So the fact that he was initiating this.
Yeah, and I felt that way. I have a little sister, and I'm the oldest of three, just like Randy. And so I felt that. And I think at the time I might have been like, I think I was still like kind of corresponding with a girl that I met in California or something. Yeah. Like there was something that was kind of in the air, but not really, we weren't dating or anything. It was just mm-hmm. like a friendship thing. Maybe it would be something more. And so I was like, well, I'm going on a trip next week to California and I'll pray on it. And if I, you know, maybe I'll give her a call. Because he said, well, she said that he finished it by saying she thought you were attractive.
Yeah.
And so basically what they did was they lied to both of us.
Well, they haven't lied to me yet because I come home from work that day because I remember I'm commuting up into the D.C. area. I get home at like 8 o'clock every night and Caitlin's sitting on the couch and she just has this huge grin on her face. And I'm like, what? And she's like, Randy, tell her. And my brother's trying to like play it cool. And
very Randy.
Yes, it is very Randy. And he finally, all he says to me is, Aaron said you were beautiful and asked for your number.
Yeah. So they made us think that both of us asked about each other when in reality they completely coerced
those confessions.
They
instigated, right, because
it's called coercion.
Because once we knew the other person was expressing interest, it changed because I was like, oh, well, I mean, if he asked for my number.
It feels nice to be liked.
Well, but it's also, it feels less like a setup because it's like,
that's true. They asked
about me, right? And so both of us were like, because he's thinking, oh, she asked about me. And I'm thinking, asked about me.
They set up a good power dynamic where we both thought we were being wanted by the other person.
Yeah.
So then I thought about it for a couple of days and I was in California. I was like, yeah, I mean, I'll take his sister out if she's cool. Like, that's a big deal. So I call her and I'm like, I'm thinking she's waiting on pins and needles for me to call her because she's like hot for me. And I call her and I'm like, hey, this is Aaron. And she's like, Aaron who? And I go, Aaron Stone, which is like, you know, my name's like my last name's kind of memorable. Like, you know, it's not like some weird whatever.
Pretty sure I was on like a business call when you called me and I had to call you back.
And so then I say Aaron Stone and there's nothing. And I go, we met at the mall the other day. And she's like, oh yeah. And that immediately is like, oh, I'm going to have to work for it, which is good. Like, which is good. And then we went on our first date and it was
wonderful.
Yeah,
you asked me out and I was like, let's go get sushi. It's my favorite thing to eat.
Well, I don't think you said that. I think I said, how about sushi? Because by then I learned that classy dames liked sushi. It was like a move. You know, I had a couple moves.
I did.
We went to sushi and we had a wonderful time.
We talked for we were probably out for like 3 hours.
Yeah. We were out for a long time. You lived with your brother at the time. So yeah. that was, you know, cool too, to get to come back and see him. They didn't make it. In retrospect, it should have felt awkward, but Randy and I weren't that close. Like we were new friends. So, mm-hmm. And then within a year we were married. Like
yeah.
I proposed 6 months. I had this moment of clarity.
Yeah.
She says on our second date.
I knew on the second date, yeah. Which for me was a big deal because I'd never felt that way about anybody before. But yeah, on our second date, I went, oh, this is what that feels like.
Thank God. And I didn't, it took me 6 months. She didn't tell me that. She didn't.
No.
And then I proposed on her birthday and we got married.
November 15th.
2014.
Yes. November 15th.
It's always hard to get those two.
2014.
10 years. It's been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That's us.
We have one Spitfire little girl named Marigold.
Yep.
She just turned 4. And we both built our businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a very happy marriage.
We really do. We really do.
Okay. So when we met, I was at Student for Life and, you know, people had always said, Tina, my dear friend, Tina Whittington, who's still a Student for Life, I've known her for 20 years. She always told me, if you're in the field, like, don't marry another pro-life activist. Like, get out because you need that break. Like, you need that normalcy almost, you know? And so I really liked that he was not in the movement. But one of the things early on that I discovered about him was that he was very pro-life and, you know, consistent to where, you know, we were talking about Just War and, we were walking around, I think it was at our second day, we walked around a bookstore and I was like, pointed at a book and I said, so what's your stance on Israel? Like we just dove headfirst into those hard discussions. And I always found his answers to be very thoughtful, to be very life affirming. And so even though he wasn't in the movement, I felt like we aligned on our values. But what was it like for you being introduced to this?
Well, there was a nice sweet spot for both of us because
yeah.
In the same way, you didn't know who my band was, which was good.
That's true.
Because I couldn't really date like a fan, but you did know the genre.
Right.
And so you weren't like, what is any of this?
Right.
Well, and I was really similar. Like, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not going to marches and stuff, but I am
yeah.
pro-life. And I had already, you know, I'm almost 7 years older and I toured the country a lot. And so I'd had a lot of experiences. What was it like for me to begin to understand your pro-life work was the question?
Yeah.
You know, having grown up in a big evangelical church, like I kind of understood the nuts and bolts of like the movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what I found interesting was like your personal, like the level of responsibility that you already had,
mm-hmm.
that you were like so young and yeah, you were like the third in charge of Students for Life and you were over these regional coordinators all over the, and there's a sharpness to what you're doing. And then like, since I went to college, and I went to a large evangelical college, which shall remain nameless, which was, you know, a good and a bad thing in a lot of ways. I sort of was out of that world until
mm-hmm.
I'd been out of that world for a long time. And then I came back to serve at my home church, which felt like, for me, that felt like the,
mm-hmm.
The rabbit trail. And so I was getting reacquainted with this whole, like very conservative leaning world and like understanding the movement again. So a lot of it was like understandable from what I'd grown up with. I grew up in a church that was like very, very political and very proactive.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of understand the boundaries of it, but it's interesting to start getting into it And immediately I realized, like, oh, there's a lot of politics here. And,
right.
And, like, how all these groups, like, you know, understand the nonprofit side of it. Like, I'm just not I wasn't a business-minded person. So understanding, like, oh, this is – they also have to keep the bills paid. And and then, like, raising up leaders and training people. And then some of that stuff was like, oh, there's a lot of mentorship, discipleship going on. And so there was just, you know, lots of points of – it was cool. I feel like in the same way I got to bring you into, like, the musical world and be like – you kind of know about this, but like, here's how the sausage is made. I just remember how hard you were working. You were working really, really, really hard.
That's for sure.
And for a company that like expected a lot and that produced a lot. And, you know, you were driving an old car and, you know, like you, you had the same, I think we met with the same mentality of like, no one owes me anything. I'm going to work my butt off. And I mean, and I really appreciated that. Am I answering the question?
And we didn't, like, we both, like, we both had really strong views about debt, too. I think that was the other thing. I was like, I'm never going to meet someone who's as radical as I am about hating debt. And then I met Aaron, and he was like, I don't even ever want to buy a house. And I was like, oh.
Well, I didn't think I could.
We did, which is great.
Without debt.
But we bought it with cash.
Like, I think the thing I'm dancing around.
That sounds a lot more impressive than it is. It was not a lot of money.
We got a sweetheart deal in a mostly forgotten neighborhood. I think the thing I'm dancing around, which I should just get into and you can cut it out if you want, is just like I was already like not conservative about anything except this. I mean, traditional politics. Like, I have lots of friends who are still wonderful, wonderfully close, family included, who are very conservative on a lot of issues. That is not a deal breaker for me. But I have been touring the world and meeting lots of lovely people who were, you know, I'm just using this sniff test of like fruit, like what's the fruit of their life? What's the, and I met lots of people who had different, and that had changed my views on lots of things. I was and still am technically pro-life because I just am anti-death and anti-war in all, in all ways. And so that was interesting to me. I mean, I remember we had a conversation about voting. And at the time, do I go into this? Like, I mean, I think if I
could. He votes now.
But I wasn't for a long time because I felt like I needed to engage politically instead of just voting as a way of like, oh, well, now I don't need to worry about society. Like,
well, so I asked him because we started dating end of November, end of October, beginning of November. And it was, I don't think, it wasn't a presidential election year.
But it was 2013.
Yeah, but there were like local elections. It might have been the gubernatorial race or something like that. And, you know, I, my degree is in government. And so, you know, I went and voted that day and he called me on the way home. I think it was to ask me on our second date, wasn't it?
Potentially.
And I had said something like, oh, did you vote today? And there was this like long pause.
I chuckled and then I paused.
And then he shared like his conviction. And for me, it was less about do you vote or do you not vote? It was more like, he had a thoughtful answer and there was a conviction behind it. It wasn't just to like, oh, I don't do that because whatever. It wasn't out of ignorance. And I was I can understand that.
I viewed it as a fast is the best way to describe it. Like I was fasting for a season from it because I didn't know what it meant. And I knew I needed to be engaged in the world and in everything. And so, and I vote now. And I think I'd also like, so I think when we met, I had already spent, you know, I liked when I met you that you'd already been across the world living in Australia for years by yourself. And, but I had all these experiences that kind of made me immune to othering, like, and so not immune to like things, some things being black and white, some things being right and wrong, but to the idea of like, oh, well, those people just believe that cause they're stupid.
Right.
Or those people just believe that cause they're evil. And I mean, there's exceptions, but most of the time it's like, no, there's that same, like,
is this starting to sound familiar?
Like, yeah, this is centered. Like there's that quote, which has been misattributed so many times. I can't remember who it was, but like the tough thing about the world is everybody has their reasons.
Yeah.
And so meeting you and being like, okay, I'm probably more liberal than what you are, or more progressive is the term I prefer.
Yeah.
And, but on this issue, like, yeah, I do think it's like much bigger. And so there was a lot of negotiating of like, there wasn't negotiating.
It was more of just, there was an underlying trust and integrity on both ends, or it was like, I could tell that again, when you can tell when somebody is just spouting talking points or is being divisive and othering because they are not interested in engaging in productive conversation, or if it's fear or whatever, like you can tell when people's motivations are not healthy. But when you are able to have conversations and say, oh, I trust where this is coming from. Like, this is what me and Allison talked about. It was like when we were talking about how we have such a good friendship and working relationship, even though we are polar opposites in so many ways, is because I could tell, and everybody that I talked to, when I'd be like, oh yeah, I just started dating Aaron Stone, 10 times out of 10, everyone would just immediately start talking about him and his band and how much integrity they had and how they're some of the best people, some of the most honest people. Like, they're like, these are some of the best guys you will ever meet. And in the music industry, that's rare. I mean, there's a lot of good guys, but that says something that you have a
thankfully, I haven't been successful enough to.
People who are just listening, you can't hear that. I just rolled my eyes. But I think it came down to, we both were people of integrity and open to conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I want to grade things on style and substance. Like, if you have good substance, I mean, style's not even the right word, but like, if you have a good thing to say, but you're saying it like with malice or with, you know, it's like, it's, yeah, we all get angry, things to be angry about, but it's like, oh, this is not, there's no goodwill here. Like, yeah. Where's the conversation? And so being able to listen to somebody and go like, oh, I really like them and I still disagree on this point, or I don't like them, but they're right. Or yeah. I like them. And so that makes me want to hear what they're saying. And also, I think they have ulterior motives, like mm-hmm. seeing through that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, it was initially like, I had been out of this, like, I lived in I ran a commune in inner city Charlotte for a while. I say that, but like,
it was
communal living. House. Communal living is a better way to say it. We were just like a bunch, when we weren't on tour, like the first time I ever heard the term communal, I was like, no, I told a friend, I was like, dude, what if after college? Like, it was this original thought. What if a bunch of us who are still single just like went together and like live somewhere that most people don't want to go, just love people and just like, not because we're the solution, not because we're the answer, but just because like that's where Jesus would go, that's where Jesus would be. Mm-hmm. And we could just like share all our stuff. And my friend's like, oh, like, and live communally. I was like, no, we're not communists. We're just going to like share all our stuff. And he was like, that's living. I mean, I just didn't, I didn't think I was creating anything original, but I didn't have any ideas of understanding it. Mm-hmm. And so I had been out of that world for a long time. And so I met you kind of not right after, but a year or two after I come back into like being in a world which was a beautiful, lovely people, but then also was pretty insular. Mm-hmm. And I'd oftentimes be like, well, how could anyone think X? I was like, well, I have a great friend who thinks X, and I know how he thinks X, and I've spent a lot of time listening to him on X, and it's worth considering, not everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, like, another thought I have on this, I'm just kind of free-flowing, is like our new record is quite a bit different than our first full length, which came out in 2008, and it should be. Like, we're different people. Yeah. It's been 16 years. We've grown a lot. We've matured a lot. I'm not in my mid-20s anymore. But I'd like to think that the things that's the same is the integrity.
Yeah.
Like, that record was staring at the toughest things in our lives and talking about them and being honest with who we were. Mm-hmm. And this new record is the same. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe the thing we connected on, was like, it is about integrity. Mm-hmm. To the point of like, we don't really let anything slide with each other.
No.
Like, we don't, like, if we have an argument, we have to, like, both of us are like, let's talk about this. We're both over communicators.
Yeah. We don't really, I mean, we have intense conversations. We don't really fight. We don't.
Yet.
We challenge each other.
Yeah, that's for, we're comfortable.
I think people are surprised. I think genuinely people are surprised that we don't have more confrontation in our marriage because we are both such strong personalities. Mm-hmm. Everyone listening, like you hear me in my professional world and even in my personal life, like I've known for being pretty assertive. I'm going to tell you what I think. And I have my strong opinions about stuff. And Aaron, he's a lot more, his edges aren't as sharp, but you're still like, Aaron walks into a room and is like very, like has a very commanding presence and, you know, is, also just a strong presence, but
neither of us are shrinking violets.
No. No, but we can manage those I don't know, we manage that dynamic by just being very open and honest and reasonable.
Well, we question each other's ideas, not each other's intentions.
Right.
And because if we lost that feeling of like,
sure,
they mean well and they're trying well, we would kind of lose the whole ballgame. Or sure, we'd immediately have to go to couples counseling to be like, oh, I don't trust her on some basic
right
level, or trust
right
him. And so we both at work. And when we feel personally challenged, we'll be like, whoa, I'm talking about that idea. I'm not
mm-hmm
talking about the fact that you came to it honestly.
Or even addressing like the times where we have had things trigger. I'm like, okay, I know you said this and I know you don't mean it. Hey, it is triggering something that's deeper in me, which is
yeah
why I'm having this reaction. Like, I need a minute to make sure that I deal with my trigger and not put that on you, right? Being able to separate what is his responsibility, what is my responsibility, and what are our own internal things.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reciprocation. We both give each other, like, you're very supportive of the things I want to do, and I'm very
yeah
supportive of the things you want to do. And I mean, I've been thinking a lot about it because we just hit 10 years. Like, we just check in every day. Like,
yeah,
every day, it's like, it's not like, oh, I'm still holding you to the vows you made 10 years
yeah
ago. It's like, no, we checked in like 4 times last week, and we're hearing the progression. So
yeah
we're like, be able to go together.
Yeah. And so all that to say, like, it's 10 years. It has not been an easy 10 years.
No, you want to talk about what it was like to watch you start build it?
Yeah. I mean, well, for starters, we moved here.
Whoa.
I would say the first like 4 years of our marriage, I dealt with severe chronic illness, and a really high stress job. And so I had to take a year sabbatical just to focus on healing. I was in a lot of pain all the time, you know, so that was its own hurdle, just being sick. I was very, very sick all the time. I'm doing, I don't know, 10,000% better now. And then in Christmas Day in 2017, we had our first miscarriage,
mm-hmm,
and that was a whole just grief on grief on grief.
Yeah.
And then
I was the leader of the whole creative production, everything at a large church, and balancing the band. So I was like, I was working crazy
yeah
hours.
Yeah, he was working crazy hours. I was working crazy hours, and then was sick, and then things kind of, we didn't
leave great.
We did. Yeah. We had a whole situation, with his job. And so when we moved here, we both did not have jobs.
We moved here on faith. Like, we
yeah
knew, I mean, that's the picture I painted on our second
yeah
date that you grabbed on. I was like, you see me now and I'm working at a large church and I have a good salary. Like, that's not the plan. This is kind of like this is a rabbit trail of faith. I plan on living in the inner city again. I had done that in my late 20s, again, in a communal living situation.
Yeah.
And I loved living in the inner city, and it wasn't a sacrifice for me to live in a neighborhood like
mm-hmm
we live in now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we painted that. So from the beginning, we kind of knew, like, this is,
yeah,
you know, this is where.
But then when we were actually in that position, it wasn't, oh, wait, we've set ourselves up so nicely that now we can move to this neighborhood.
No, we literally had a date on the calendar that was like a month after we got here, where if one of us doesn't get a job by then, we're out of money.
Yeah, I mean, we moved to this neighborhood. We bought a house with all the savings, except we say we kept $5,000 in our bank account, spent the rest to buy this just dump of a house.
120-year-old house.
Yeah, it was livable.
To us,
it was livable. It was a roof over our heads, but it was rough. Like, all the windows were broken. The electrical was so questionable. Like,
we had literally switches where, like, we don't use that switch because it sparks. That's not a joke.
Yeah. A mess. Nothing was up to code, but it was a roof over our heads. We had nothing. I mean, we had nothing. We had $5,000 in the bank and no jobs. And we just went, I knew I was supposed to do pro-life work. You knew you wanted to do the video.
I didn't know that yet. No, I knew I wanted to change the equation where our life would be more about what we feel like we want and are supposed to do and less
mm-hmm
of what we have to do.
Yeah.
And so I knew that if we could take care of our mortgage and just get that off the books, like, I mean, really, my thing was I wanted to live in a neighborhood that was underserved, that I just enjoy being in a neighborhood. Like, it's not hard for me. Most people wouldn't. So why not go? And secondly, it would make my life as an artist, like, I would just need a third of my money.
We wouldn't need,
and that would be a good trade-off.
But we came into this neighborhood thinking, like, oh, we're going to serve them, and they ended up serving us because we are in...
Well, I have lots of strong thoughts about not thinking...
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, we moved in intentionally knowing that we wanted to be a part of a community.
Yeah, just know we want to be a part of doing good, beautiful, true things.
But they ended up serving us
so
well and helping us rebuild. I mean, because we were pretty broken when we moved here.
Yeah, we were pretty worn out. And so we started at the same time. Like, I kind of fell into video production because... Yeah. Again, well, her brother actually, I volunteered to make some video content for your brother. I volunteered to make some content for her brother. And typically, like, he does, he's like, can it be a whole documentary? And I was like, well, I guess so. I've never made something that long. And so then we started, and I kept telling him, I'm like, as a storyteller, I'm telling you, this will be the number one thing that helps you raise money. He's a, has a mission agency that helps you raise money. And as he was raising money that year, everyone was like, hey, I'll give, but I want to give towards the documentary, because these high business owners understood the value of storytelling. So then he called me and he was like, hey, can we get that thing quicker? I was like, well, it's a pro bono project, but if you want to make it my job for a few months. And so that's how I started the company.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
No.
So
you were doing that. And then I was in conversations with David B. Wright, about the beginning of what was then, we hadn't even named it. We actually called it Women's Health Protection Project.
Super killer.
Yeah. That was like our working title.
Why'd you ever change it?
I know. Women's Health Protection Project. That was our working name.
WHPP.
Yeah. WHPP.
Oh, Protection Project. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoop.
So we didn't know if we had even had the funding for that. And so I'm like waiting on pins and needles. And it came down to the week of, if I don't get an answer that we are going to launch the testing of this project, I'm going to have to go find another job.
Yeah. We didn't have a kid yet. And I think too, it was like my whole life until I got married, I just would like, if I saw something that was like, I always use that scene in the movie Signs where the guy's like, he's like, didn't you hit the most home runs in the history of the state? And he's like, yeah. The other guy's like, you also had the most strikeouts. And his character says, it just felt wrong not to swing.
Yeah.
And so my whole life, I'm like, if there was something that seemed cool or valuable or worthy or like in line with, what I wanted to do or what I felt like I should do, I swung for it. Mm-hmm. And then when Missy got married, like, I still didn't worry because I'm like, she's so capable too. We're both capable.
Yeah.
And so when we moved here, it just felt like, well, we have a moment to swing. Mm-hmm. And we knew a year ahead because we both are planners. Like a year ahead, yeah, we're moving.
Right.
We ended up moving a month sooner. But
right.
So we got here and it was like, we circled a date and I was like, I don't know. I've been praying and fasting for like what I was going to do. And meanwhile, I was sort of accidentally starting to do it. And then Missy was like, you took some job interviews.
Yeah, I talked to some people. I talked to the pregnancy centers in the area and some things. But I when David B. Wright was explaining to me what this project was about, like, they have figured out how to shut down these abortion facilities. And they were describing the type of person that they needed to take on this project. And they just had happened to pick Louisville, Kentucky, where we had just moved, as like where they wanted to test it. I mean, it was like,
that felt providential.
It felt so providential. Cause like of all the places, they needed a specific type of person, which met me to a T. He was like, we need someone that's like systems operation.
Well, he was like, Missy was telling me, he said he needs this and this and this. And I'm like, I go kind of joking, cause I know what she's going to say. I'm like, that's you. She's like, I know.
It's totally me. And then he's like, and we're doing it in Louisville. And I was like, David, I'm moving to Louisville. I mean, it was wild. And so we're sitting here and I'm like, okay, like, is this project getting off the ground? Because I knew at that point, I was like, I'm not an activist, you know, and I had done 6 years at Students for Life and it was great. But like, I wanted to use my government background. I love the policy. I love the strategy, the research, all that stuff. And that's what they needed. And so the week, I remember your family was in town visiting. And we were giving them the tour of Louisville. It was in December. And it was down to the week of, if they don't get the funding for this, then I have to go find another job. And David called me and he was like, we're ready to go. We got it. And so that was December of 2018, and we started basically immediately I just started researching, like, how do you set up a business? It was literally like, here are your email addresses, you know, just starting to do like basic organizational management.
Yeah, you would go up to our guest room, which was upstairs, and that was your, and then I was in the front room with my filmmaking partner learning how to edit a full-length film, which I'd never done. So we're both just like getting up, and then I would pick up lots of side carpentry, and you had some side stuff you were doing too.
Yeah, I did some lobbying with Kentucky Right to Life.
You did some personal assistant stuff too.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It was just like whatever we needed to do.
Yeah.
And at the time we weren't even sure, like, we believed in that we could succeed at those things, but it was like, it felt right to take the swing.
Yeah. And I think collectively, I don't know if it was the first year or the second year, we made like, you know, $40,000. I mean, like
Well, we were fine with that.
Yeah, that's fine. Like, but it was like, we were in true startup mode.
Yeah. And both learning, so that was cool. I do feel like a lot of, when you ask me what it's like to watch you build it, I feel like a lot of sympathy because we're both just 2 days ago you said to me, and no one's told me that before.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I know that feeling so well of like, you don't even know what question to ask, but you have the skill to get into something.
Yeah.
And so you're getting into it. I had this really revelatory moment last year when we were filming for the pieces that we made for CCS. And if you haven't seen the main piece we did, I don't know what it's called or where you keep it. It's on your main website.
The Innovative Strategy Closing Abortion Business.
It's probably on your main website.
Yeah, it is. It's on our main, you go to centerforclientsafety.org. It's the first thing you see.
Well, and we were at the end of the year and we're like, okay, we'll do a video for her. And we do plenty of stuff for other nonprofits. So we sort of kind of knew we wanted and how to make it make the budget work. But I see her work all the time. I mean, we both have home offices. She also has this office. But I say half the time you work at home and we check in a lot and we tell each other everything. So I it wasn't a surprise to see her working. But what was different was instead of coming in and checking or hearing while I'm walking to the closet or something, we just kind of sat in the room with the cameras on for a while. And we did some like slight documentary edge to the piece that we did. Mm-hmm. And that was like really revelatory to be like, it was fun to watch you in your power in a different way and to watch like this thing you built actually work. Because most of the time I hear with people, she's on a video call or she's on a phone call, but it was cool to get to see her with her team. And just that love. I mean, I know the level of care she has. I know how much she cares. You don't know how many times I've seen her cry. Am I allowed to say that? And not always, not because someone's been mean to her, but because she's just working so hard. It's usually exhaustion and frustration more than it is sadness.
Yeah.
But to get to watch you from the corners of the room and work and just like, wow, this team is really sharp. Like you've got some sharp, you've hired well. You know, I'd like to think you're a good picker.
I do have a great picker.
I'm pointing at myself. I'd like to think we both are. And so that was really fun to watch and to be able to just say to anybody who cares about the pro-life issue and who understands like that what CCS is doing is not a partisan thing. Like this is something that anybody could, and we have friends that are liberal who are pro-choice and we will explain this issue and they're like, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing when they understand it, you know, and that is that's one thing that I wish more people understood. And then I'm like, listen, if you're someone who wants to give money to making a difference in this issue, very few people have innovative strategies. Most people, their business now, their nonprofit is 50% about finding ways to get more money. Mm-hmm. And so they have all kinds of mission creep and politics and stuff. You know, I'm not naming any names. We could. But like, this is a group who actually has a real strategy that does something real that is different in them. It's not just the same old, give us your money so we can like, you know, make marginal differences. This is a strategy that will continue to be applicable regardless of the political climate. And then I'm like, if it matters to you to know, like bang for the buck, like I can't imagine anyone working harder or caring more, like, especially considering how little of it you keep, like knowing how much you and your team pay yourselves. And it takes one to know one, like, cause you're in building phase and stuff. It's like, there's like the ROI on you guys is insane.
Yeah.
You know, like how hard you work, how much you care, how, you know, how translatable this is to most people. Even if they're not, you know, conservative or technically pro-life, like they're all pro-life in this way.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was cool to get to watch that and to be able to just say to anyone listening, like, if you're thinking about giving your money, then I'll tell you, like, you couldn't give it anywhere better. Like, no one's going to work harder. No one's going to use it better. This is real. A lot of people talk a big game. They'll say what they want you to hear. So you give them money so they can keep the wheels moving. Maybe they have some good intention, but like, these are people who are actually trying to like shut down harmful abortionists who are treating people awfully. These are people who actually care. Like, there is, I mean, you've done so much of this work, but about once or twice a year, you'll be like, today I just read some of the worst stuff, just horrifying. And it made me emotional again, and which is saying something, because you're like,
yeah. I guess what's interesting is like a lot of our supporters and even our team, they don't see that side of it, because I try to keep that, you know, in my, I try to keep that separate, but you see the impact that it's.
Yeah. Well, if someone says like a horror movie scared Quentin Tarantino, you're like, wow, it must be bad. That guy's seen a lot of horror movies. Like when stuff makes you emotional, I'm like, man, how bad does it have to be? And then how sad is it that like almost nobody else is fighting for these people? Mm-hmm. And these are, we're talking about, you know, people, we're talking about women who have gone to have an abortion who are so betrayed by that, by that version of the industry. And so it is just, it breaks my brain sometimes that you guys are working so hard. I just feel like once everybody figures out what you're doing and how good you are at it, like it'll be pouring in. Maybe it will one day, but
you, what's interesting is that because there's nobody else on the team that has been here since the very, very beginning. So we've been around long enough to where we've like gone through one cycle of board members and like had some staff turnover. So like you're the only other one who has seen the evolution over time, right?
Right.
So like,
right. Well, I remember when you were doing all the jobs in our guest bedroom,
right?
You know, like you were actually,
but even figuring out the idea,
yeah,
you know, of like, how do we do this? I don't know. Like,
right. How do we do it right?
Yeah.
So that we build something that is kind of bulletproof, because we're going to be in a high bullet area. Like we're poking a big bear here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you and Missy is like, she's a justice queen. She loves policy. She loves spreadsheets. Thank God. God love her. Cause it's not my area of expertise, but like you wanted to do it all right. You wanted to do it all like fully above board.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of corners you could have cut. Thank God for some of, you know, you know, Christine, man, she's incredible.
Christine Smith, he's referring to our vice president of investigations. When he was making the video that he referred to, which again, maybe we'll put it in the show notes so people can watch it.
If you haven't watched it, there's nothing I can say better than
that. That's true. But he spent some time and his partner spent some time with Christine filming. And you said he came home and he goes, oh my gosh, Christine is unreal.
Yeah.
Those are your words. She is unreal. And I was like, oh, I know what I have in Christine.
Well, and I mean, oh, your whole team is, but like, and I knew that I liked her and I knew she was doing good work, but then spending time with her, like she's as sharp as she is humble and kind and clear. And just like that mixture that most people that are that smart are not that gracious.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that are that gracious are not like that, like cunning, like, you know, like what is it going to take? And so, yeah, I've been impressed by the team you built, and the work you've done and, you know, we continue to, you know, it has been cool to be building these things together and learning so much in very different worlds. At the same time, there's a lot of sympathy where like, tonight we're going to feel it. It's Friday night. We'll both be
tired.
And everybody feels that, you know, I don't want to say like we're that special or anything, but, to be learning two industries at the same time, or for you, you knew the industry,
but
there's the job within the industry.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, like I could not have done this without your support, because for a long time, especially the past like two, you know, since Goldie was born, really, like I was working the more traditional full-time job and he was growing his business that gave him a little bit more flexibility. So he really stepped in as more of the like predominant kind of stay at home parent role. Right. And even now, like he picks Goldie up at 3:30 from school every day.
If you're wondering how it works, it barely works, which is that I shoot once a month. And so I'm usually gone for a week.
Yeah.
And those weeks you take a hit.
Yeah, I do take a hit.
You take a hit. And then most days you take Goldie to school so I can start working earlier. And then I pick her up, and now I get her, I let her watch cartoons for 1 hour while I get another hour of work in. But since I own my own company, I can be more creative with my hours. Whereas like you have to work a 9 to 5. So it kind of works that we're both working a full and half-time job at the same time.
Yeah. But I'm saying like you.
Yeah, sure. That
have stepped into.
Well, the decision was like, you don't have the flexibility.
Yeah.
So I need to have the flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And my big thing is that in the big picture, we're both supporting each other equally.
Yeah.
But as far as like flexibility goes, like you don't have as much of it, you know?
Yeah. I just remember so clearly I was meeting with somebody and it was the middle of a work day and my daughter was, I think, 2 or 3 at that age. And she was going to a nursery school 1 to 2 days a week. And they were like, oh, you have a daughter. Where's your daughter? You must have family that lives in town. And I said, no, actually we don't. So yeah, we do not have family that live in town, that help with childcare. And cause he was like, oh, your parents live in town. I said, no. He goes, oh, your husband's parents live in town. I said, no. And he said, well, who has your daughter? And I said, my husband, like my husband has my daughter because he is at home with her. Because he has the flexibility to do that. And he is making that sacrifice so that I can put what I need to into growing this company. And
I mean, when she was really little, we would just trade her. It was like 50-50.
Yeah.
And then it became clear that like, as you started growing, you had to work more hours. Whereas I was like, so the initial idea was like, oh, okay, I will be totally off the map for a week, a month. And then the other 3 weeks I'm in pre and post production meetings and I can work those around. And then since she's been one, we've had her in daycare.
She's 1.5.
One and a half. And usually it was like 4 days a week. And then
not at the beginning. It was 2 or 3.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Well, then we had a friend who would do a day. Amy would do a day.
Oh, that's right. Oh man. And this was all during COVID.
But, no, I've never not worked at least.
Yeah,
I've always worked at least 4 days a week.
This was all during COVID on top of all that.
And then until recently I would work kind of full days. And then 1 day a week I would keep her home from school. It's like we don't really want her to be in school 5 days a week when she's this little.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just been, what do you need? Like, I'll be like, oh, I just got offered. I have to go to studio for a week with the band. And we're like, okay, we'll figure it out. I mean, I think you're good at knowing what's too much.
Yeah.
Because I will try to do everything.
Yeah.
And now I've learned that she's very wise about my breaking, that I do indeed have a breaking limit and that I have to listen to you. And so, yeah, yours is very rigid. Mine is very free.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of make it work. I don't think, even as I look back, I'm like, how did it work? And it just kind of, that's a daily thing.
Yeah.
You know,
Today
you took her to school and I'll pick her up. And sometimes often both of us, or either one of us will go, I got to do some more work after we get Goldie down tonight. That's pretty normal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So any final thoughts about being married to, quote unquote, pro-life leader? People say that.
I mean, again, I don't know if you want to keep this in, but it's difficult because all the politics and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, which is why I appreciate you creating this podcast of trying to have these conversations. And maybe this is the other thing. I've been advocating for a long time that you start to be like the same way that I shield my fans sometimes with like, oh, they're not ready to hear me say this yet. And so I don't put it in a song, but I'm very careful with how I put it in a song as opposed to like being callous about it. You for a long time were like not being fully out there with who you were because you were like, well, they're not going to like that. I think X or they're not going to like my nose ring or whatever.
Right.
And
That's true. I finally put my nose ring.
I can't dye my hair. The first thing you did when you took that earpiece, you dyed your hair.
I dyed my hair blue.
as like some way of like expressing your freedom.
Yeah. The freedom.
And I've been saying from the jump, if you're going to go, when she started WPH or whatever the heck it was called, I was like, you need to start being just yourself because A, it's the only way you can keep going.
Yeah.
It's going to be tiring enough. You can't do all that work and be having to maintain a facade. It's too exhausting.
Yeah.
And secondly, I think the bulk of people are more like you and more like where we're like, all this stuff is incredibly nuanced and there are evil people doing evil stuff, but for the most people mean well. And either don't know something
or
they're considering something weighing it more heavily than me because it's not my experience.
They have their own. Yeah. They're being informed by their own experiences. And
right. And so I was like, you just need to start being, you kind of need to come out of the closet with like who you are. Mm-hmm. And if it breaks it, it breaks it. But you can't be anybody else than Missy. And also, if there's things about you that aren't healthy and aren't true and aren't good, no one can push on them because they don't know about it.
Right.
And so I've been excited to see you start like kind of putting yourself out there, which has made it easier. It was very difficult the first couple of years when like I sort of had to closet some stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like we would have to check, you would have to check in with me. Like, can I tell them what,
I tell people what I do?
Yeah. You'd meet like a new friend of mine. She doesn't know from like torn. Can I tell them? And I'd be like, yeah, well, first of all, you can tell anybody you want.
Yeah, but is this going to cause conflict?
Is this going to be safe? Which I appreciated.
Right.
And it was tough for me to be like, oh, do I have to go in around these people and act like I like insert politician here?
Yeah.
Who I find, who I find to be not genuine, I don't see good fruit in.
Right.
And so that's been cool to see that start coming out. And that's made it easier, mm-hmm. like, as we've been able to be more honest with. And thus we can grow more,
right?
You know, we can learn more, we can do better work. We can not have the attention of like keeping a business afloat and a facade afloat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called masking and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Thank you. This was very, I think people are going to appreciate your perspective. So the last thing that we normally do when we're talking to people is like, what do you do for fun? Like, cause normally I'm talking to people that are like engrossed
in. We can talk about this together. We have a thing we both have.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Okay.
I was like, since we're both.
We're on the same page already.
Yeah, telepathic.
Yeah. Thank God. We were on a date night. Was it your birthday? Or Mother's Day?
I think it was Mother's Day.
And we went to this sushi place. Because it's still the move. Yeah. And then next door, there was a game store.
A board game store.
Well, we didn't know what it was at first. You're like, it looks like a game store. And
that's right. We didn't.
Just in the last few years, I've gotten back into playing video games as a way of Missy helping me gear myself down and not always needing to accomplish 50 things a day. And so we walked in and it was board games. We're like, oh, cool. And you're like, we should just get a board game. And I was like, okay, I like board games more than you, I think, usually.
Yeah.
And so I like got the guy and I explained him. I was like, we need a game where we're not competing with each other.
No.
It needs to be very chill. It needs to not be stressful. It needs to just be lovely.
Yeah.
And what we want, I've been saying for a while, we need more hobbies together.
Mm-hmm. Because we enjoy a lot of the same things, but like my big things are like gardening and.
Which I play a support role in.
Yeah. And like you have your music thing, which I play a support role in too. So but like, what are we doing together? Right.
And I want to just like, I don't always want the day to end and like, neither of us cares that much about TV. We'll watch it. But I mean, unless it's British Bake Off, then we're.
Or
like,
Monty Don.
Yeah, we're really into watching that right now. And so he recommended this game. It's called Dorf Romantic. The romantic is spelled with a K.
Yeah.
Dorf is spelled with a dwarf.
Yeah.
And it is kind of like playing which puzzles you love.
Yeah.
It's kind of like playing a puzzle. That's the vibe. It's really chill.
Yeah, the puzzle plus chess.
Yeah, there's chess too.
And you're not competing. It's collaborative. So you do it together. So you're building out.
And you can play with like 10 people. It doesn't matter how many people you have. But
it sat on our shelf for like a couple months.
Did it really?
Yeah, because I was like, I'm not ready. I can't take on something. Like I was anticipating that I wasn't going to enjoy it. So I kept being like, I'm not ready. And then one day I was like, let's try it.
And it is like we can always play it while there's like a cooking show on or something. Like it doesn't, but it's like one of us pulls a piece and you basically are building landscapes and all the pieces have rules like chess where they can't all go together the same. And then as you play, the other cool thing, it's like, I always say it's like chess meets a puzzle meets a video game in the sense that
it's got the campaign.
Yeah. As you play and you get certain scores, you unlock new pieces that make the game A, more complicated, and B, makes it...
You sound so nerdy right now.
I'm totally proud of it. Makes you able to score more points. And so I would say if we don't play twice a week, that's bad.
Oh, no.
We usually play three or four times a week. And sometimes we'll play twice a night because it only takes about 45 minutes. And we both have loved it. I think for you, it's unlocked this idea that maybe board games, you actually do like them if they're the right kind.
If they're the right kind, yeah.
Which is when my thesis, but we hadn't found the right one yet.
Yes.
And so it's like, we're not competing. We're on the same team. We get to score high and it's very chill. It's very peaceful, but it's the right amount of engagement at the end of the day. Like, I don't just want to watch TV. Maybe I don't have it in me to do.
And it's something we're doing together. Cause if we're just sitting on the couch and staring at the TV, it's just doesn't feel as.
Yeah. Our big goal for a long time was to get 400 points, which we had looked online and saw that's really hard to do. And so then we were on our 10th anniversary trip. We went to Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island, Canada. and it was the Olympics. And so I was like, babe, we're so close. We had scored like 380 or something. I was like, this is our time.
I think we had gotten 398. We'd gotten 398 and it would just like crushed our soul.
Yeah. We were like, so I was like, babe, we're on vacation and the Olympics are on. It's time for us to bring our best. Mm-hmm. And so we played every night. And the last night we scored like 423
or something. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, we blew it out of the water. We destroyed it. And so that's been a wonderful three cheers for maybe it's just a lot to be said about just enjoying your partner. This is one of the biggest ways you have a good, you know, like I joked with you, we were in Canada and I hear a lot of music because it's part of my job. And like 90% of all songs are about how either I wish I had somebody or I'm glad I have somebody. I'm like 90% of the world just wishes they had somebody who wants to walk around and say at the same time, isn't that cool? And have someone else go, yeah, that is cool. And so this is something we both enjoyed. It's been lovely. So Dorf Romantic.
Yeah.
High recommend.
Yeah, I do. I highly recommend it for board game players.
Even if you're a neurodivergent, stressed out, I don't have anything left in the tank.
Yes.
Please don't ask anything
don't
of me.
Don't ask anything of me.
After 9 p.m.
Yep.
It's just still a great fit.
Yeah. Agreed. Cool. Agreed. While watching gardening shows.
Yes, while watching gardening or cooking shows.
Or cooking shows. Yeah.
Well, I'm very proud of her. Thank you all for supporting.
I love you very much.
Love you.
All right. Well, this is probably going to be a longer episode than usual, but that's okay. I think people will like it. But if you want to find out more about the Center for Client Safety, you can go to centerforclientsafety.org. Like Aaron said, on the homepage is an amazing video that he made about us and about our work that goes more in depth, explaining our strategy and how we do what we do. We're on socials at Center for Client Safety, and I'm on socials at Missy Martinez Stone. If you want a video made, a very well produced video that is not insanely expensive, you can look up Ultraviolet Media.
.us.
Anything else? And also go on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you get your music and look up my epic.
Listen to our new record, Loriella.
Listen to Loriella. I think you've got the right fan base here. I think they're going to really like it. So yeah. Thank you so much. We will see you next time.